Today we have Graveyard School, Slime Lake. I read book 7 of the Graveyard School series because why the hell not? And it turns out there is an answer to that question, why the hell not? And that answer is because this is a series. Kind of, sort of. Halfway into Slime Lake, it seemed there was something extra going on. Why were we spending so much time establishing the characteristics of, say, Geordi, a young girl who has a computer with her everywhere and whose name being the same as the part man, part machine, part headband character from Star Trek didn't escape me? Geordi has nothing to do with the plot here, but she and Skate and Jaws and a few other characters make repeat appearances which clued me in, yes, there is a Graveyard School-iverse. Yes, characters appear in this book who have appeared in previous books, such as the aptly named Skate, whose main hobby I'd like you to guess. Well, I was going to come up with two stupid choices and then put skateboarding third, but let's be real, Skate starred in The Skeleton on the Skateboard. It's on the nose, and pretending like it's not is just something I don't have the tolerance for. The Skeleton on the Skateboard starring Skate, come on. Oh, I forgot a character. Polly Hannah, who is a character used as a reference in the form of being Polly Hannah-ish, which sent me down a whole thing. I thought it was Polly Anna. Is it Polly Hannah? It's not. But I looked up the origin of Polly Anna. Okay, so she's a Disney character. And okay, guys, did you know that she's an orphan whose life philosophy centers around something she calls the glad game, which involves finding something to be happy about regardless of the situation? For example, one Christmas, Pollyanna hopes to get a doll from a barrel of presents. I guess that's how presents are delivered to orphans, just a fucking barrel you reach into and hope for the best. But she instead gets a pair of crutches. And her reaction is to see this as a good gift because she's like, well, at least I don't need crutches to walk. First of all, was the next kid in line desperately needing new crutches? Was he like, goddamn, this cruel barrel system that denies me the crutches and gives me a useless doll instead, so now the other kids are all calling me Bohunk Cripple? This was 1913, everyone. I'm not responsible for their language. Secondly, crutches count as gifts? Just a reminder that you are able-bodied? I don't mean to say anything cruel about people with disabilities. I just mean that a card that says, it could always be worse and specifies how, would that count as a birthday gift? You could always get kicked in the stomach by a horse. You could always lose an eye. Or maybe for my next anniversary, a list of men who are worse than me. You could be married to, I don't know, international recording artist John Mayer. Does he suck? Maybe he doesn't suck. Shit. I'm going to have to do real research to make a list of worse guys. Third, what motherfucker put crutches in a present barrel for kids? Someone who had a miracle happen and was like, my God, I can walk. Don't need these anymore. This is like the guy who puts expired black beans in the food bank donation or whatever and just walks away like, I did a good thing just now. I'm a really good guy. Fourth, is there no filter between the placement of items in the barrel and the kids receiving the items? So if someone put a severed head in there keeping this Halloween, some kid would just get a severed head? How is that a good system? How is that even a system in any sense? I knew Pollyanna-ish meant being a little too optimistic and naive, but this is the first I'm finding out how annoying it is based on its origin. It's genuinely upsetting. Probably because I'm the opposite. Whenever I'm watching a reality show and someone loses and they're like, well, I got to show the world what I can do, and that's the real victory. I'm like, well, winning would have also allowed you to show the world what you can do, plus you would have won. So I think you're maybe posing this as a false version of a zero-sum game here. Or when they go with the classic, my parents are proud of me and that's all that matters. Well, I think your parents would have also been proud of you if you won. I don't think winning would have lessened their pride at you. At worst, same amount of pride? Okay, enough about Pollyanna. Let's get to Slime Lake. The opening line is, his eyes were hurricane gray, but darker. Yikes. A hurricane is something most people haven't actually seen, and it's certainly a variable color. It's stupid to make a comparison like that, where you're like, it's like this thing, but not totally, not really. Okay, if you're just going to make a comparison, it's a fictional book, so you've got options here that don't require you to make a statement, then back off your own statement in the opening of your book. You can make the eyes hurricane gray. Are we going to quibble about the image in your mind of eyes being slightly darker than a quote-unquote standard hurricane? Wouldn't the character be just fine if you lightened the eyes a tiny bit? Or you could use something dark. His eyes were the dark gray of burnt ash and wood. Or you could make the analogy work by darkening the thing you chose. His eyes were the dark gray of the skies during a hurricane at night just before the last light vanishes. These aren't amazing. I'm just saying maybe a tiny bit of work would help. I mean, if you're going to insist on starting the book with a character's eye color, which is not super exciting, but whatever, maybe just make it so it actually works. This book commits another sin when it attempts to do a Goosebumps-style fake-out at the end of a chapter, but terribly. Really, really terribly. Okay, a chapter ends with a character screaming, "Look out!" and we hear a roar. Now, we're led to believe it's some kind of monster. As in a creature, not a copy of the Metallica documentary that helped us all see that, hey man, metalheads got feelings too. It turns out that the object in question is a motorboat. If you were watching this as a movie, or if you were on the scene, it would be incredibly obvious that the kids were reacting to a motorboat, not a Nessie. Nobody with visuals would mistake the danger of this scene for a sea monster as opposed to a boat, but because the book doesn't give us those details outside of it came toward him with a roar, we don't know that it is not a monster. It's a stupid version of a Goosebumps chapter and cliffhanger. It doesn't work because the book is hiding information from the reader that is incredibly obvious to the characters. You can't have a book where the characters know more than the reader, and when the reader finds out, they feel tricked and pushed out of the world of the book. But there's an even worse cliffhanger later when Mark, one of our main kids, is experiencing something scary, slaps himself, and the book says, "It stung, it hurt, it proved he wasn't dreaming." But then the chapter ends, the next chapter starts, and it turns out he was dreaming. Okay, book, you can do a bullshitty dream fake out, I'll allow that much, but you can't explicitly say a dream is not a dream and then say it was a dream. That is a bridge too far over these Slime Lake waters. Let's do the overall plot here. There's a snobs versus slobs thing happening where Mr. Quail, possibly named after Dan Quail, is doing a sort of hostile takeover of Slime Lake, trying to rename it Emerald Lake and selling snacks and allowing speedboats and shit like that. Which is funny because I think kids would be cool with that. Speedboats and snacks are fun, and most kids I know don't exactly appreciate the fine feeling of being on a peaceful lake. I looked it up, and Dan Quayle's vice presidency ended in 1993. This book came out in 1995, so it's entirely possible that this is a sharp political barb placed inside this book. Turns out Quayle, the one in the book, not in real life, kidnapped Pops, the lake's owner, and is trying to force Pops to sell him the lake or something. It's a classic tale in kids' movies and books, many of which seem to involve corporate intrigue for reasons I do not understand. Why do writers think kids care about commercialization and corporate takeovers? This is not something I care about a ton today, let alone when I was a child. The twist in this tale is that there's a Nessie living in the lake, who is friendly, of course, so all is good. One of my favorite parts of this book, because I can see it becoming an R-rated version, is that the slime on the lake eats away at your clothes, but leaves your skin fully intact. This is prime 80s slasher bullshit, where you need an excuse to get characters naked, and you do so by exposing them to a slime lake where the slime makes them naked. It's the long way round, but in Leprechaun 4, Leprechaun in Space, a lady flashes people her breasts because she says, in her culture, that's the equivalent of a kiss of death. I give those writers props. Stupid reason to get boobs in a movie, sure, but they worked for it, damn it. Nobody can take that away from them. Anyway, things in Slime Lake work out. The kids save the lake from evil Asian condo developers or whatever 90s bullshit they were on about, and the kids become friends with the Nessie, and there seems to be a promise of further adventures that I don't think ever came to be. Honestly, it's something R.L. Stine rarely did, and I think it's for the best. Very few Goosebumps end with the kids finding out that the threat was friendly all along, and I applaud that. I like when it's not all, oh, we just think this thing is bad because we are the monsters. No, sometimes a sea monster eats people and it's a monster. The book promises a recipe for slime at the end, and it delivers with a guacamole recipe, which may as well be some kind of paste or goo to a kid. Most kids ain't eating that shit, especially in the 90s. I also found it very funny that avocado plays a role in the recipe that follows a tale of gentrification. The flag of gentrification, if it was a country, would be an avocado on something that doesn't necessarily need avocado. Slime Lake was not the worst bump off I read, but it did start me down the road of appreciating R.L. Stine just a bit more.
Goosebumps. Reader beware, you're in for a scare.